Brush by fairy tales, itsy bitsy diamond wells, big fat hurricanes, yellow.
Welcome to Hidden Worlds, where we get out and about in the Northwest, looking at different habitats and what lives there.
And in the end, we're bound to rebound off of
wind. Now, perhaps you were listening last week when I took a trip to a beautifully rich grassland in County Leitrim. Now, in that programme, we also touched on the subject of rivers. And today, we're going to dive into that one in more detail. We previously met Shayla Healy on a woodland wander with a group of children by the Duff River.
Shayla Healy, Arbora Culture, and then there's woodlandwanders@gmail.com, and the wanders is WANDERS. So that's how you can get in touch with me for tree consultancy and woodland walks and talks.
Who better to set us up today and remind us to take a little break to appreciate the wonder of our rivers?
Without even swimming in the Duff River, which probably would be the right idea, it's kind of like it's like you're bathing in already without being in it. You know, all those negative ions coming everywhere. You know, especially during lockdown and all we've been through. You know, it's just it's there for all of us. And so John O'Donoghue, he of course would have. He used to say, talk about this old Irish word called Tinnalach. And he would say Tinnalach is a really old word for hearing the rush and the roush of nature. And it's something above the tone that I'm speaking, or that we're used to hearing, you know, just on that mid-range in our ears. And so you sit here, allow your mind to just move beyond up those upper registers and hear the sound of nature communicating with you. Just see if you can pick up kind of just some sort of message that you can hear in that sound above all of that, yeah?
So let's hold on to that feeling as we meander through the life of our various waterways. Firstly, Lorraine O'Donnell of Inland Fisheries Ireland lays down the framework.
So I think if you're explaining a river system, it's the catchment, and often within the river catchment, there's also a lake involved as well. If you think of it like the catchment being a human being and being a body, because it is, it's self-sustaining and it is able to work away on its own, really it's linked then to the wider ocean. And what we all need to live in, we need to breathe and we need water. And a river is very similar to that. And how a river breathes is really through its small little tributaries. So you'll know in Ireland, like, you're never too far from water and small little ditches and brooks. And we've all these lovely names for tributaries. And they're the lifeblood. And all of these feed in, like your body, like the little capillaries carrying the blood. They're all linked up then to the heart. It's all intermingled. So it's so important to deal and look after the whole lot of it. You know, you look at the big river, like you look like the Eastsea or the Balisadare River. We never just concentrate on the main river itself. You have to look at all the little tributaries up from it. And then all the land along it is also connected. And then all the species that are within it are connected. So I know we say a lot about fish moving up along the catchment. They're constantly moving. You know, we talk about webs, like a spider's web and food webs. Fish are often at the top of the food web, and they're dependent on everything below it. So at the very lowest level, you have the small little microscopic pieces of algae in the river. People think it's slime when they lift up the stones, you know. So you have fish and you have insects that feed on this, and then the fish feed on the insects, but also birds are feeding on the insects. And then you've got different animals, you know, otters feeding on the fish, you've got foxes feeding on the otters. So it's all intermingled, and it's so important that all elements are protected. You have to focus on the whole of the area, because everything is connected. And if you take out one piece, it has, in, you know, very devastating impacts for for the rest of the species. So, and the clean water then is fundamental to it. The people at the top of the catchments are really lucky to have this lovely clean water, as are the fish at the top. So we have to be careful then, as we're coming down along lower into the lower sections, that we're all looking after the water for the person down below us. So yeah, it's all interconnected, and we all have to help each other along it. And we have to look up and we have to look down and look left and right, because we all impact on it.
I also met Irene's colleague, Paul Condon, by the gushing, rushing stream at Slishwood. As a bonus, you'll be able to enjoy this one fully with the sound of that water babbling in the background.
It's a lovely wee stream, and actually 30 odd years ago a development project was done here by, back then it was the North West Fisheries, and you can see there's a wee weir over there, you see, and you see how the weir creates the agitated water, which creates the dissolved oxygen, which that's what this, it's actually the game fish like, you know. There'll be a pool beyond that as well, so that's good, especially in the summer months and the summer levels when they're very low. They need depth, a lot of the juvenile fish will sit in a pool, you know. And then there'll be cover logs and that, so to get into the shade and get cover from any predators and that, you know. The hern, you see the hern standing on the bank, you know, he's looking for, you know. And you see some bank protection along here with the rocks and that's important as well, you know, because that protects the banks, and it also gives cover for juvenile fish as well.
Okay.
You know, they're sitting under the rocks. And we have to think about, as I say, water levels. Middle of winter now, high water levels, but summertime in drought conditions the water obviously is very low, so you have to consider that as well. And but the trout, the fish will find their way, you know. So as I say, here you definitely would have eels here. They're protected now, and there's a bit of concern about the eel stocks, European eel. But we have them here, so you know, they're everywhere. You know, they are everywhere, but the stocks are declining. So you cannot fish for eel, even actively as an angler cannot fish for eel. If he gets an eel, he must put it back. And when I'm thinking about the eels, I must mention the lamprey. They're an interesting little fish as well. Like,
tell
you know,
us about those.
The wee lamprey, they'll burrow into the mud on the bank or the substrate, and it's a miserable start to their life, really, because they'll sit in that bank for 4 or 5 years and just stick their head out and filter the water. That's what they feed on, and they're blind, oh my God, for 5 years, you know, think about it. But then eventually they'll change, metamorphosize, and they'll become either a brook lamprey, river, or sea lamprey.
Take me back to them here in the muddy bank. Are they eating anything there? What
Well, they filter the water. That's where they get their food from, the microscopic items in the water.
I presume that means that the water has to be healthy, that you wouldn't have all these microscopic things living in it.
Yes, absolutely, yeah. Okay. Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. And so that's it, to stick their head out of the mud and just sit there and filtering, feeding for 4 to 5 years, you know. But eventually, they leave, and their eyes will open after a number of years, and they start feeding in the river, and then, as I say, the river lamprey move down to lake, whatever, and go into an estuary. The sea lamprey, they obviously go to sea, and then they feed out at sea, and then they come back into spawn, and their spawning time is around the May, June, midsummer there. Yeah, and they spawn, interesting enough, they have suckers, you know, the big round mouth with suckers on it, and that's how they feed, actually. They grab onto another fish or mammal, whatever, and literally eat the animal, the fish or the mammal, whatever. Mainly fish, really, and that's what they feed on. Yeah, and chew, that's what they feed on. And when they're full, they just come off. But then they will come in to spawn, but with those suckers, they're quite strong. And they can actually make a red or a nest of stone gravel themselves, and that's where they'll spawn, in that little heap of gravel. Yeah.
Right.
So that's the lamprey, and they're widely distributed throughout the district and the country. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, but they are quite ancient. Don't ask me now exactly when they evolved, but they're very interesting fish.
The canal at IT Sligo provides something of a contrast to that bubbling energy at Slish Wood. However, as Declan Feeney pointed out, streams like this offer safe zones for lots of living things when there may be few other options.
The river itself is, the river is actually only a very small stream, and it's what we call brackish. It's tidal. We do get some salt water coming in from Sligo Estuary. And interesting enough, we've had students do work on the biodiversity in the river itself, and we found flatfish. So we find baby flatfish come up here, the small ones, and I'm talking maybe the length of your baby finger, they're not going to be something you're going to catch and bring home for your tea. But effectively, this is an area that would help the estuary to continue to be the kind of the biodiversity lungs of Sligo Bay. It's like a nursery. Yeah, it's a bit like a nursery. But we also get lots of insect life in the water. And we also get blennies and a few other small little fish that are in the stream, as well as these little kind of nursery flatfish. There, we'll get worms, we'll get snails, we'll get other insects. All those are food for something else. So we get herons coming in. We also get kingfisher coming down through here. We'll get ducks. We've had snipe. If you come down and look at the stream, you'll find that it actually may look quite untidy. It might look kind of ragged and there's stuff sticking out of it. Not shopping trolleys. We've got what we call emergent macrophytes, which basically means plants that like to have their roots in water, but they grow out of the water themselves. So they emerge out of it. And they can look a little bit rank and they can fall over. And then, you know, next year you get more plants grown. But actually this little succession that goes on in this area is really good because it acts as a nursery for lots and lots of different insects and bugs. And right now, because it's autumn, we've lots of leaves around the ground. So they act as great carbon sources. They'll actually provide food for a lot of insects. So we'll get moths, we'll get butterflies. And actually, during the summer months, along the edge of this river, we actually get orchids, which are rare. And actually, they're protected under Irish and European legislation. And they're here in the middle of Sligo town. But the reason they're there is that our ground staff at IT Sligo have done a very good job of moving back the cutting regime. They leave areas, but it allows natural seeds in the seed bank that's in the ground to come forward. So in the summertime, we'll end up with an array of different flowering plants that you wouldn't normally see because otherwise they would be cut. We definitely get an range of bird life.
These long grasses that are here at the edge of the river, is that their kind of place?
Well, they like that for shelter, which means they can kind of nip in between them. They're good for nurseries for their juveniles when they're, you know, when they're actually coming out in springtime. But there's also food because you're going to have seed heads. You're going to have flowers that will release their seeds. You'll also have pollinators and insects that will come along. So we get an array of different species, but they're all connected to each other because our flowering plants need sunlight. The insects need pollen. You end up with birds needing insects and grass seeds to grow. We have a number of trees that love to be on the edge of a river, and those are growing out, up and out over the river. So they provide natural shade. Now, we're never going to have a salmon stream here. We don't have that type of location, but basically we're working with the environment we have and trying to make sure that we maximise its potential and its biodiversity to as much as possible.
For Shayla Healy, one tree in particular is the hero of the riverbank.
So, anyone recognise this tree? This is a one tree that's really unique because you get the female flowers and the male flowers at the same time. Mm-hmm. It's kind of got it all going on. Everyone, this is the Alder Farn. You know, in North Leitrim we have a place called Glen Farn. So it's the glen of the alder. Usually that means it's a wet area because alder definitely doesn't mind getting its feet wet. It's really good for taking up moisture in the ground. As well, it's a tree that's overlooked all the time, but it's a magical tree that you just walk by and you wouldn't know all the wonders that it does. It does something that almost no other tree can do. It just magically produces nitrogen. And nitrogen, of course, is life-giving. That's what we need in everything. I mean, unlike legumes, where they can source nitrogen, they send the roots down, and deep down through the roots, they'll create little nodules, and they'll intercept with the soil, and some kind of like metabolic process goes on where it actually produces nitrogen. It's a wonderful tree to have, you know? I mean, it's always underestimated.
And does it produce nitrogen in the soil?
Oh, in the tree, and then brings it up. And so, just really good tree for coppicing as well, and, you know, fast growing. Just a great tree, you know, to be by the in wet areas.
Declan also draws our attention to the importance of the riverbank.
The construction of the new campus at the IT in the 1990s meant that they had to put in a bridge to cross this canal. So at the time, the decision was that they would move some of the banks back from the canal, widen the area, put in some careful planting. So use native species to plant along the edge of the river and build what we would call a riparian zone, which is a zone between the kind of the terrestrial habitats and the, which is the grasslands or the meadows that are around the college, and then the aquatic habitat, which is the river itself. And that's an area that's really important for rivers, because riparian zones basically are, and if you walk near any river that's got lots of trees and it's trees that are hanging over the river, that's in the riparian zone. It acts as a flood control, it slows down water, it acts as a barrier for pollution, so it actually absorbs a lot of pollutants that might happen to get into the land and might get into a river. Functionally, one of the big reasons we need them in Ireland is that they do slow down water and they stop flooding downstream, and that's become an even bigger challenge as we go into the change we're seeing in our climate. In IT Sligo, our riparian zone has developed and it's a native tree species mostly. So to encourage native species actually helps the entire ecosystem. It helps our plants obviously to kind of develop, but also beyond that it helps all the insects because they will thrive on it, and that of course will be part of the food web, which means you might get birds, you might get mammals.
Next, Paul Condon takes us under the water as we cycle through a year in the life of a river, taking in all the different types of fish that come and go as the seasons pass.
We can start really where we are now. You know, we're December now, so we're into the spawning season. So all the salmon and trout, really for the game fishery, this is the spawning season now. No fixed date now or anything, you know. So, and they'll set a red, and we have in the stream here, in the Slishwood stream, salmon and trout spawn in here. This, you know, they set a red and they'll spawn, not to go into the whole thing, but they hatch out as eggs, and then eventually after about a month again they'll be they come out of the eggs as alvins, and they'll stay around the red for a number of weeks, maybe 3-4 weeks or whatever, and then the alvins will grow into fry, and then they stay around that particular area and they glide or whatever, and they'll feed there. Okay,
and what are they feeding on there?
Initially they feed on their yolk, on the egg itself, you know, and then when that's gone they start feeding on little invertebrates and things like that in the river, you know, and they then expand, you know, because you could have a couple of thousand eggs, you know, yeah, up to 5,000 eggs for a big salmon, you know, hen salmon. So that's it, they'll disperse themselves as they grow into fry, and in the glides and the riffles and that. They like well oxygenated water. Like what we're looking at there, a lot of movement. All that, that's any movement in the river, that's oxygenated water. Mm-hmm. That's what they breed, okay. you know, and that's what they like, especially the game fish, salmon, and the trout. From the fry stage then, they grow into parr, and they'll stay in that particular section of river, okay. As I say, up to maybe 3-4 years, and then they smolt. And then they move down the river, right out into the estuary and out to sea as smolts. Yeah,
right.
They're either one sea winter or two sea winter, whatever, spring fish, grills. That's for the salmon. Yeah. And the trout then, between their competition and feeding, that some will go to sea as sea trout, others will stay in their native river and they'll just remain there for their lifetime and just spawn in the upper headwaters then of the same river. Yeah.
Okay.
Can move on, I suppose, yes, to the next season, into the spring season, all right, because then you're into, and we talk about the coarse fish now, that's their spawning season. Pike and the perch and the roach and the bream and all that, they spawn in the wee beds and lakes, all right, that's slack water and that. And their spawning season is generally be sort of between February and March to April, end of March, that kind of thing. And then, yeah, those eggs are on, they hang on the reed beds. And then when they hatch out, they stay in the lake in that system. They're not like the salmon, they don't really migrate. You will get what they call a wee jackpike going up into streams, feeding on the trout and the salmon parr and fry. Yeah. Well, there'll be the competition there shortly, and they're after food, you know. So, but that's the coarse fish. So now we're into, say, the spring season. And then we have the spring fish coming in. So the spring fishery starting, you see, with the big salmon coming in from the Atlantic. And that leads on into early summer then, and the grills run. And the grills, the one sea winter fish coming in then, salmon. And of course, we're always watching, or keeping an eye, or meeting people on the estuaries and that, and the trout fisheries, because the trout fisheries start then, generally February. But then that leads into the summer, and the mayfly season for the trout. Very, very active. It's only lasts a couple of weeks, maybe 3 weeks, you know, but it's brilliant to see it, you know, the mayfly rising.
Yeah.
Yeah, and you see them on the trees and that, and then if you're out on a quiet, still evening, and you can see the trout fishing on the mayfly, you know, and you might get one yourself, you know, so it is brilliant, absolutely brilliant, yeah.
Yeah.
But then with so seasons-wise, then you're into late summer into the autumn then. The fisheries generally for catching fish, for angling and that, finishes for the game fish. That's the close season. And what's happening there is the fish are just moving upstream again, back up to the spawning beds, you know, yeah, for the cycle to start again.
So as you go to different sections of the river where the river is moving slower and it can be, you know, what we say, silted or sandy rather than stony, you get some worms there and you get some small little, like they're like literally little mini crabs and mini little freshwater shrimps, they're called. So those, while they don't have as much need for oxygen, they're still very important because there's different species that live in that section of the river. We have mayfly and stoneflies, which are often found up in the nice riffle areas where there's nice gravels, because they like lots of oxygen and they're very important, and having lots of those present in your river system shows how healthy and clean the water is. The adult would lay its eggs on top of the water and they gently, slowly fall down and they start to stick on the stones, and then they'll live along there for a certain period of time, and then they'll start to hatch out, and they hatch out as small little grubs. They don't look a bit like an insect that's going to fly, and you know, it's amazing too, you know, these tiny little insects are able to live in these big rivers hidden under these stones, because the flow of the water, you know, is over the stones, and when you're under the stone you're protected from this massive flood and this massive flow. So even the little adaptations that they have when they're inside in the water is just amazing, and they attach on for dear life in behind, you know, the flow. So they start to, they basically suck those algae off the stones, and they start then, some of them have little teeth and they pull together little bits of debris and mostly vegetation, and they start to grow. And then it depends on how cold the water is as well. Cold water can often, they grow that bit slower, and in warmer water, because the algae will grow faster with the heat. It's like, you know, when you fertilize the lawn, if the sun comes out, it'll grow faster. It's the same way in the river, the sun will drive it and it'll grow faster, and they'll get fatter. Then they realize they're not getting enough food, so they start to, you know, start to float to the surface. And, you know, like all insects, they have another stage where they metamorphose and they come in out then like these beautiful mayfly. And the story is that they only live for a day. They look so beautiful. They do these lovely dances. And the fishermen will tell you that they see them hatch out, and then by the evening, they're, you know, the poor devils are dead on top of the surface again. So I think it is true, yeah. And they do their dance and they mate and they lay their eggs, and that's their life cycle done. So yeah, they're very beautiful when they hatch out, especially, you know, in the west of Ireland. It's a lovely sight, you know, generally in the middle of April to the end of May, and you see them stuck on the hedges and their tails curved up, and they're lovely on photographs on the top of your finger. They're really nice. They're very photogenic, but they are very vulnerable because they're, you know, they're at the lowest part of the food chain. Changes that impact them at the moment, our air temperatures, you know, are predicted to rise over 2 degrees. And 2 degrees means an awful lot in their lives, because it'll be, the water temperatures will rise as well. Maybe it'll mean too much algae on the stones that they won't be able to attach on properly. Maybe it'll mean that the algae will be different because it won't be what they're used to feeding on. But then the water, we have high flood events. We have high drought events where we've long drought. So maybe they just, the water isn't there, the gravel's become too dry and the habitat isn't there for them. So their indicators, absolutely, they're the first indicators. They're very susceptible.
Lorraine and Paul point out that there may also be other unwelcome changes in our rivers if temperatures continue to rise.
What we notice is that, you know, fish populations change. We have some cold water species, which are our native species. So most people are conscious and aware of salmon and trout and eels. We also have Arctic char. They would have been a species that we have in Ireland since the Ice Age. These species are really under threat. They've been lost from a lot of lakes. They live in very deep upland lakes. We have pollen, which are another species that were around. These are mostly in the Shannon system, but again, they're declining. So, you know, you have other warmer fish that are more tolerant of the warm water, you know, roach and perch. So these fish are doing really well in certain places, and especially during these warm summers, where the ones that aren't used to these warm temperatures are unfortunately declining. Yeah, that would be a big one now, would be for us, is that the fish populations are changing because of this, the temperature change, you know. And there's a lot of monitoring, you know, my colleagues in research are doing a lot of monitoring on that. You know, from our point of view in fisheries, we have a big campaign to make sure that people, if they're moving between catchments, that they don't bring plants with them. Like, for example, in the River Corrib, there's a weed there called Lagrosiphon, and it would be really, really, you know, disastrous if that plant was to move to other parts of the country. You know, we encourage it for fishermen, but it's for anybody. It's for kayakers. It's for anybody that's using the water. You know, as you're leaving an area, make sure you check it visually and take all those little strands of weeds away from it so that you don't transport it where you're going next. So you're not bringing in anything, and you're not taking away anything that could cause damage to another catchment.
I'm thinking now of, say, Glenaid Lake. There's quite a high population of roach in Glenaid, and the trout stock that used to be in Glenaid back 30 years ago, there was good trout to be got. Very few trout in it now. They've more or less moved. You would get good trout in the river, all right, the Bonnet River, and that's the source of the Bonnet, you see. But there's quite a high population of roach there. So it's kind of taken over, in one sense. There's a good population in the Loch Gill as well, you know, and they're in Loch Arrow. So they're everywhere. They have moved around. They were introduced, and not that far back, I think.
And what happens? Is it that they outcompete other fish for food? Or
exactly, yeah. And they reproduce so quickly. So, yeah, they can take over because they have a higher reproduction rate. Yeah. That's it, really, with the roach. And unfortunately, they're in, they're there. And then you have the hybrids as well, you know, you have the roach-bream hybrids, and that's a dilution of the bream stock then, you see, as well, because they're spawning at the same time. Yeah, on the reeds, when the eggs are laid, and then they're spawning together and in the one reed bed, you know.
So yeah. All the different eggs will be there
it
together
happens.
In the water,
yeah,
and
yeah,
that would...
Yeah, okay. And get fertilised by another species, in one sense, yeah. So yeah. You get, that's where you get hybrids from.
Sometimes we take nature and we cover it over. We push it under roads and push it under bridges. And for a long time, Sligo Town actually pushed its back to the Garavogue River. Actually, it was a really useful dumping ground. We used to just pour our waste into it and then ignore it. But society's changed. We now look at the rivers that run through towns as being a major asset to us. And we've turned around and gone back to face the river again. We've got all our life now returning to the riverbank. And that sounds all very exotic and, you know, Mediterranean in some ways, but it's something that we did organically in Sligo Town in the 1990s. It means that we've got walking paths now that run from the centre of Sligo Town the whole way up as far as Dorley Park and right up towards Loch Gill itself. And that's on the south side going up by Cleaver, but on the north side, that's all opening up as well. We have a habitat there called an alluvium woodland. It floods in winter time, and we have ancient oak forests in within it. It needs a little bit of protection. It needs to be left to be, because it's not just for us, it's actually for our future generations. And we will be opening up that part of Sligo Town in the near future with a new bridge, and there's an opportunity for us to actually have walking paths that run from Sligo Town the whole way as far as Hazelwood. These are things that we can do that can actually link biodiversity into Sligo Town and expand our town in a way that's not directed by roads, but more for humans and for us to actually get out into nature. The challenge for us, if we do put in paths that run along some of these very, very sensitive habitats, is that we have to make sure that we don't disturb these habitats, because they've existed for hundreds and hundreds of years. So our challenge as humans is to look to biodiversity and use it so that it continues to function. If we were to have lots and lots of people trampling through a specific area, what you find is that the ground underneath your feet starts to get compressed and it gets muddy. That happens naturally, but it also is a sign that we're actually impacting upon the biodiversity purely from footfall. But that has to be in places that can be dynamic enough to be able to take that type of pressure.
When rivers reach our bigger towns, they tend to be moving quite slowly, and this is the part where we see many more plants growing.
You know, it's usually reeds and rushes. That's what generally grows in the river. You have lovely floating plants as well that grow, and they provide extra oxygen then, because they're like trees, you know, or they're like the lungs of us. They produce oxygen when the sun is shining. So they provide plenty of oxygen. So then you find that the fish will be able to hide under it. So it's very important from the point of view of cover from predators, from those birds that are swooping all the time, very hungry. So the oxygen is really important during the daytime. The danger is that when you have excess plants growing in the river, that they will provide huge amounts of oxygen during the summer, and they'll attract the fish into the area. So there's super saturation, and the fish are all happy during the day and they're hidden. But then at night time, the trees, they stop to produce oxygen because they don't have the light. Then they start to, the oxygen can drop very quickly. It can drop so quickly that the fish or the insects can't get out of the way quick enough because it's gone dark. And then it means that you can have a fish kill, or you can have, you know, the insects dying at a localized spot. So you know, it's all about balance, really. You know, too much plants in the river can cause damage, but obviously everything in moderation. They're meant to be there as well, a certain amount of them.
Because so much wildlife comes along the Garrahoog River, it brings birds and animals right into the centre of Sligo town. Here's Nature Learn's Michael Bell.
Now, Sligo here, we've got the river running through town, and that brings lots of other wildlife into town. Right in the middle of Sligo, for example, I've seen otters and mink. And just walking past shoppers, they very often don't notice them at all. Especially otters, I might see them just pop up in the river there in the Garrahoog. All through town, you know, even up by the bridge, I've seen them up there before. Not often, but, you know, the odd time would see them. And even once I've seen a seal right up in the middle of Sligo, and they have been known to go up as far as Loch Gill. So, you know, all kinds of wildlife can be seen in the heart of a town. A lot of it is thanks to the river there. We even get seabirds, like, for example, a great northern diver that normally we'd see way off the coast, but they'll follow the channel up, and I've seen them up as far as Quay Street, and they'll be diving for crabs and things there. So just by keeping our eyes open, we can notice lots of wildlife around us in town here too.
What kind of things are they after?
Certainly the seabirds would be after the things like the crabs. That is tidal up as far as Quay Street. But I say that there'd be salmon going up the river, and that's when the seals will follow the salmon up the river, and obviously the otters will be hunting for the fish in the river too. So when we get further upstream, you know, you get the freshwater fish and things, and that attracts lots of wildlife like the otters and all that too.
Poet Sean Hickey has collaborated with Michael to produce a beautiful booklet of poetry based on the river. And this is such a nice way to enjoy its beauty and wildlife, even if you're not lucky enough to be there.
I think the main idea came from Karen Kennedy, who works with the local authorities, waters and community office. And it's proved very popular, you know, and we usually once a year will have a little outing like that and read a few poems, talk about the nature along the river. And it's nice to mix the two together, because I think nature's obviously a big inspiration to all the arts, whether it's poetry, storytelling, music, whatever, you know, it's where a lot of that inspiration comes from.
Do you have a favourite poem in the book?
They're all very good, but I'd probably like his herring gull noir poem's a pretty good one, like, you know, so. So this is Herring Gull Noir by Sean Hickey. You're a striking fellow in grey blazer and pink kecks, but not pleasant at all, too given to the rackety squabble and the hit and scarper, and you have blood on your bill. And those yops are the glee of a hoodlum, happily beyond redemption, surveying from the nearest rooftop a doltish world propitious for swag. A penchant for ice cream and chips at petulant gatherings of your cold-eyed clan, on the dingy jetties and frowsy wharves of dubious ports and maudlin resorts, where strategies of skim and trajectories of escape are elaborated, all the angles covered, and the pecking order revised by querulous captains amid queasy clamour. It's a wonder you don't smoke, what with all this seedy glamour. John would have read that a lot better than me.
We certainly do get such joy from our rivers in lots of different ways. Building on that connection, there is lots of scope for communities and citizen scientists to get involved. In fact, this is something that Inland Fisheries Ireland welcome.
A lot of community groups now are getting involved in this, and they're trying to learn and understand more about their water quality in their area. And they're getting training on this to learn about how they identified species. And it's relatively easily done once you're trained to do it. And they're able to see then and monitor the changes over time of how clean their waters are by looking at these insects. And they're seeing them alive and seeing them in real time. And it's amazing, because it means that there's ecologists now all over the country that are, you know, doing their day job, and then they're also providing all this lovely information for scientists and for managers like us to show how healthy and clean the river is. And obviously they can alert then if something is going wrong. So if they see something changing, or they see, you know, God forbid, that there's nothing there when they do their sampling, then they can alert it to the different agencies that are involved in, you know, dealing with pollution control. And they say, there's something going on here. And often, you know, they're the first people to flag these issues. So it's really important. And in my role in particular in education and outreach, I'd love to get some feedback about what information people want to know that we can present to them, that could make it easy for them to understand what's going on in their local rivers. We ran Go Fishing Week online last year with a series of webinars, and the links to those are all available if anyone's interested. But I'd love to get people's feedback on what they'd like to learn more about. And, you know, we'll work away in the background to provide this. So thank you.